Let's get back into our study of the great flood in Noah's time. We're going to look at Genesis chapter number 7, starting at verse number 11, where we read the start date for the flood. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, which I read as the eighth month of the Exodus calendar, on the 17th day of the month, which I read from the Septuagint, the Greek Old Testament, the 27th day of that month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were opened, and rain fell upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. When we closed up yesterday, I was talking about the catastrophic collapse of the vapor canopy, or the stable weather pattern that was part of creation from its very inception. And that seems to have been through the dew point being activated every single day. If you've got this perfect, almost greenhouse-like environment of the ancient earth, just the few degrees change in temperature from the daylight to the darkness hours is going to condense all of the vapor that's in the local air, wherever you're living, and bring it as droplets, as dew, on all the flat surfaces near you. And this would have been sufficient to keep the world well-watered. We would have also had the natural springs and the river systems that were part of the original world. We don't seem to have had huge extremes of environment in that perfect world God created. There were not desert zones. There were not ice zones. There doesn't seem to have been really super high mountains, nor were there very super deep oceans or lakes. Everything seems to have been very moderated all over planet Earth. We've even talked about how there seems to be agreement between most creation scientists and the secular scientists that the supercontinent existed previous to the flood. Pangaea is what it's been given a modern name for. And that all life was thriving here on this great big continent. And then something happened. This is a belief in catastrophic failure of the stable planetary system. I will describe it as best that I can in the way that I imagine it. I recommend going to the creationist websites that I've talked about before. Places like answersingenesis.org and icr.org. You can even go to Discovery Institute. Their address is discovery.org/ID. Intelligent Design is where they talk about a lot of the things as to why planet Earth is the way it is right now. But it would seem to me that something triggered the breakup of Pangaea, that it began to crack right along what we would call the Atlantic, the mid-Atlantic ridge. And those of us that have always been intrigued with such things, we see how North America and South America and Europe and Africa can almost slide together to the mid-Atlantic ridge like some great big jigsaw puzzle. So that mid-Atlantic ridge seems to have been, I think, the source of the big breakup of Pangaea. That ridge was probably shooting out high-pressure water, maybe as steam, and breaking the continent apart and shoving the two portions away from one another, sliding on tectonic plates is what we would say today, at very rapid speed. And that erosion of the edges of the continents is going to take a whole bunch of dirt, particulate matter, and magma is going to be involved in the explosions here as well. And all of that's going to be shooting way, way high up in the atmosphere, many, many, many miles up. And it would have come into contact with the perfect atmosphere. The atmosphere where all the water vapor is perfectly suspended. And it would have changed the dynamic that had been stable all these centuries since creation. And all of that vapor water is now going to gather around the particulate matter that has been thrown up there, and it's going to condense. We've got changes in the air temperature, and it's going to start precipitating. It's going to start falling down to the surface of the earth. Some of it is probably going to be coming as very heavy rain. In other parts of the collapse area, it's probably going to be starting to come down as lots and lots of snow. And this may, in fact, explain why we've got some of the animals, like the mastodons, that were chewing on summer-type flowers, and then they froze to death almost instantly. And they almost die as they're standing on their feet, it would appear, from some of the finds that we have of that. So I believe all of that starts happening during the beginning stages of the flood. And so you've got both the fountains of the great deep that are bursting forth, and the windows of the heavens are opened and dumping out all of that moisture. And this collapse spreads around the entire world, around the entire globe. And over a 40-day period, all of the water that's been suspended, all the water vapor that's been suspended in the atmosphere over planet Earth since creation, turns to liquid or turns to crystalline form and falls over a 40-day period. Now, the arc is going to be lifted up by the advance of the water through the area where the ark has been built. And the ark has been designed in such a way by God that it is highly stable. I know that the folks down at the Ark for Answers in Genesis, the full-scale Ark down there, they've got rounded ends to both of it. I have shared with you my own belief that probably it was just a big box, that it was just a great big barge. It doesn't really matter in the long run because it's the ratios, the length to width to height of this thing that is going to make it practically uncapsizable, no matter how big of a wave that gets thrown at it. So the ark is buoyed up very quickly as the waters advance across the face of the earth, and then it is riding above the turmoil that is being carried out by the flood that is effectively washing the planet clean of all the sin and rebellion and challenges against the authority of the Creator that have become part of Earth's history up to that point. Now, the 40 days and 40 nights, that's going to effectively bring us up by my calculations, to the fourth day of the 10th month. Remember, I'm changing the calculation over to the Exodus calendar, whereas I think what's in the text here is from the pre-flood calendar that started actually in the fall. And I'll talk more about that again later. So here we read next, verse 13, on the very same day, Noah and his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife and three wives of his sons with them, they entered the ark. We know that they started boarding 7 days before, and now on the day of the flood, everybody's on board, including the animals. Verse 14, they and every beast according to its kind, all the livestock according to their kinds, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth according to their kind, every bird according to its kind, every winged creature. They went into the ark with Noah, two and two of all flesh, in which there was the breath of life. And those that entered, male and female of all flesh, went in as God had commanded him. And then he who is shut the door. So that's the reminder again that the loading process starts 7 days prior. At some point in the next 7 days, perhaps even up to the seventh day when the flood begins, they're doing the loading. And then God himself closes this door. This door, I believe, was probably on the upper level. They might have had some sort of ramp system. Maybe it had been built so that you could enter it from a rise in the landscape and go across maybe a short bridge and into this area. But once all the designated persons, eight of them, and all of the designated kinds of animals, two of every regular animal, and seven, that's three pair and a spare, of all the clean animals or animals that would have been used as sacrifices back at that time. Once all of those are on board, God himself closes the door and the flood begins. Verse 17, the flood continued 40 days on the earth. The waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the face of the waters. And the waters prevailed so mightily on the earth that all the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered. Now immediately, do not think of high mountains like the Himalayas or the Cascades or the Andes or the Rockies or any of the places like that. Those high mountains, every last one of them, seem to be something that happens at the end of the flood. They come into existence later in this story. Previous to the flood, as I'd already mentioned earlier, there is good reason to believe that the landscape was much more moderate in its differences in heights. You can think of some of the mountains, as we call them, in the Appalachians, or in the Ozarks, where I grew up, or in the Wichita area over by the Oklahoma region. All of these are less than 2,000 or 2,400 feet above sea level, so they would have been nice, pretty rises on the environment, but still been rather low by the standards of the high mountains that come into existence later. The water covers all of the high points on planet Earth up to the following. Verse 20, the waters prevailed above those mountains, the lower ones that I was talking about, covering them 15 cubits deep. Now, if this is the ancient cubit, it's definitely right around 25 feet above those low points on planet Earth, or which would have been lower than the high mountains that come into existence later. So from our standard today, let's say probably 25 feet above the highest old mountains like the Smokies. This was all that it took in order for God to accomplish his purpose, which was to eradicate all life, all air-breathing life that had been compromised by the actions of man, sinful man, and the actions of the fallen angels from the beginning of chapter number 6. So verse 21, all flesh died that moved on the earth, birds, livestock, beasts, all swarming creatures that swarm on the earth, and all mankind. Everything on the dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. He blotted out every living thing that is on the face of the ground, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens. They were blotted out from the earth. Only Noah was left, and those who were with him in the ark. So this was a great big execution. This is God that's carrying out, so it is absolutely and perfectly fair. This is a great big redo. It is a reset of planet Earth. And the waters then prevailed on the Earth for 150 days. And that seems to be counted from the start of the flood event itself. And I believe that that would put us on the Exodus calendar, remember, to the 27th day of the first Jewish month. So that would be in the springtime. That's the 150th day of the flood. Now, what's happening during this whole time that the waters are on the earth? Well, this again is a place where you would go to the creationist resource sites that I've recommended, and they have a lot of stuff about what happened during the flood. The flood is the explanation for much of what we see on planet Earth that the evolutionists claim to be evidence of ancient age, such as the sedimentary layers. All of those massive layers that are rock now, they were not laid down over millions and millions of years, but rather they were laid down after weeks and weeks and weeks of the flood stirring around the topsoil and the debris from that topsoil and all of the human remains and all the animal remains, all being stirred up, first of all, in the washing machine action of the first 40 days, and then settling down in layers over the remaining 110 days that we're talking about here. And those settled layers, those sedimentary layers, were on top of the Earth's surface on the continents that are still sliding apart during this part in the flood. And they will eventually start hardening once they are brought up out of the water. Some of them will start to harden just simply because of the pressure of all of that debris on top of one another. And this is the reason you find all of these fossils in all of these sedimentary layers all over the Earth, and why you even find marine fossils at very high altitude. Because once the flood starts to end, a lot of the uplift of the brand new mountains, like the Rockies and the Himalayas and the Andes, all of that uplift is going to bring up with them these sedimentary layers that were laid down during the middle portion of the flood. And that's why you find them at such high altitudes later. Next thing we read is in chapter number 8. God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the livestock that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind blow over the earth, and the waters subsided. So it's not that God had forgotten Noah. This is just a way of expressing God moved on to the next phase. He didn't just simply leave Noah hanging around on this great big barge floating. He finishes the story, because the waters were not intended to remain permanently over the whole face of the earth. So we've got all of this water that came from the collapse of the ancient vapor canopy. And it's all above the existing land, at least 25 feet above the highest points of the existing land. Well, if we're going to have people live on the land again, we need for that water to subside. And so God begins working at that. First of all, we have the turning off of the sources. And this actually is kind of a retro statement because it goes back to the end of the 40 days. The fountains of the deep and the windows of the heavens were closed. The rain from the heavens was restrained, and the waters receded from the earth continually. So once the water quit falling out of the sky, because the vapor canopy had pretty much expended itself. And once all of the high-pressure venting from underneath the crust had finished, because eventually it's going to lose steam, shall we say, once all of that finished at the end of 40 days, then we can start reaching some sort of equilibrium. At the end of the 150 days, the water had abated. And in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. Now, that's the ancient calendar designation. The calendar designation that I think existed after the Exodus for this would be the 27th day of the first Jewish month, which is the 150-day limit. And this is when the ark hits its eventual resting spot. Because what's happening here is something that is mentioned poetically, I think, in a couple of different psalms. And that is that God begins to deepen some of the oceans, pull them down, and he begins to raise up high mountains. And this can actually be explained in the tectonic plate movement that I described to you earlier. You remember the Mid-Atlantic Ridge seems to show the crack between North and South America and Europe and Africa. The two plates start gliding away from one another at a very high rate of speed. And eventually, what's going to happen on a globe? The other sides of those plates are going to slam into one another or slam into other plates on the opposite side. And so what do we see happening? We see all the high mountains start popping up around the Pacific Rim. We've got, of course, all along North America, we've got the Rockies and the Cascades and all of the Olympic Range and things like that, because they represent where the backside of the North American plate rammed into the Pacific plate. And then you've got in South America, the Andes start popping up because they're ramming into a plate that's coming up from Australia direction. And we know that the portion that we know of as India today, it seems to have slid away from its original position near Africa and slammed into the Asia plate and raised up the Himalayas. And what happens in almost all of those places is you also get a buckling downward. So you've got a buckling upward and you got a buckling downward. And so the oceans are deepened because of trenches. And this begins to bring the dry land back available to us again. And as the waters begin to find their level, then the ark bumps up against a volcanic mountain, or the area of several volcanic mountains, called Ararat now, and it kind of just bobs against it as the waters are subsiding until finally enough water goes by that it settles on a particular place. And no doubt God was directing exactly where it was going to land so that it would be level enough that Noah and his family and all the animals would be comfortable as they waited out the next part, which is you've got to wait until the water is completely drained off and that the ground dries up enough that you can get out and start doing agriculture again. So verse number 5 says, the waters continued to abate until the 10th month, and in the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen. Now that translates, I believe, into the 5th Jewish month of the Exodus calendar. And so this is going to be in the summertime. And, that's the 4th month of the Jewish calendar. And that's when it's obvious to everyone, there's some mountains over there, and there's some mountains over there. Now, they're higher probably than the original hills were, but now it is clearly seen that the water is going down. Verse number 6, at the end of 40 days, and that, I think, is 40 days from the last calculation, so that would be the 10th day of the 5th month in the springtime calendar, the 244th day of the flood, by the way, Noah opened the window of the ark that he had made, and he sent forth a raven. It went to and fro until the waters were dried up from the earth. Then he sent forth a dove from him to see if the waters had subsided from the face of the ground. But the dove found no place to set her foot. She returned to him in the ark, for the waters were still on the face of the whole earth. So he put out his hand and took her and brought her into the ark with him. So he sends out a couple of flying animals, a couple of birds, to let them scope out the place. The dove is not comfortable. There's no place really for her to settle. The raven doesn't ever come back. It's possible that the raven begins to change diet at this point to become a scavenger bird, and it had no problem feasting on some of the floating carcasses and didn't bother to come back to the ark. And we know, because we've seen this in modern time periods, some animals can change from vegetarian to scavenger just because of the scarcity of food and their own willingness to make that change. And so that may have been what was going on here. We've got a little bit more that deals with the dove, but we'll have to kind of save that until tomorrow. But effectively, Noah and his family are now just waiting for God to give them permission to come out of the ark and to resume their lives on planet Earth as God's image.